Go Mountain Goats, hello, my name is Finlay Wilde. This is episode 30. I am back after a bit of a break from the last episode. I've been quite busy doing various things, not a ton of fell racing and hill racing, but had some good results in Mel and T, British Champs race up on my back doorstep, and had fun going around Wasdale, then in the lakes, which was, for me, it was a pretty hot day. I found it a bit of a struggle with the heat, but that was such a great route. It's the first time I'd done it. I'd love to get back and have a crack at a better time. Last week was pretty good. Actually, earlier this week, I got on my Memoirs round, again, close to home, and managed to take my own record down by about 11 minutes. So it was, I mean, it's always great running in those hills. And I've gone on about that at great length in various of the other podcasts. It's part of the Tranter round, etc. So yeah, I went, which way around did I go? Clockwise, the opposite way than I tend to go for the Tranters. And just had a blast pushing myself on. So this is episode 30. I wanted to just mention something called It's Up to Us, which is a collaboration between Mountaineering Scotland and the Outdoor Access Trust for Scotland. This started was launched on the 28th of May. Basically, it's a three-year campaign to raise awareness of the desperate need for investment in the repair and maintenance of informal upland paths across Scotland. So whenever path repair happens, I think on average it takes about £90 per metre. So it's not cheap. And there's a lot of areas that are, you know, much more heavily used than they were in the past, and definitely taking some erosion. So the idea, I mean, there's no formal money or structure for sort of doing these repairs. As far as I'm aware, you know, it's private landowners, and then there's some involvement from people like the Jean Muir Trust and other owners. So the first phase of the scheme basically is focused on Antielic, to do some pathwork there, and then they're aiming to broaden it out and go forward. So they're obviously looking for kind of big player sponsors and investors, but they're also looking for individuals to be aware, spread the word, and donate if you can. So the website is savemountainpaths.scot. Worth having a bit of a look there to get more of the information, and yeah, I'm certainly going to be making a donation to that to try and help look after the mountains that we love so much. So this episode I am meeting up with Natalie Hockrigg, who's a runner and a swimmer and a GP, actually, same as myself, in the North Lakes. Mm-hmm. And we're going to be talking about I would call maybe the phenomenon of swim runs, which mm-hmm. I know hardly anything about, actually, particularly centered around the Ring of Stirling, which is a really exciting looking round with running and five swims up in Torridon. Natalie's also the female record holder for the Frog Graham round, and she's done the Puddle Buckley and other swim runs. So, welcome, Natalie.
Thank you very much, Finlay. Thanks for having me and taking an interest in swim runs.
No, it's great. It's something I've been aware has been happening. You know, so I've been aware of it for quite some time, but I really don't know much about it. And I think this is a real good opportunity to hear about it and talk about some of these. You know, there's a lot of overlap, isn't there, with obviously the Bob Graham and the Paddy Buckley. So the classic big running rounds of Lake District and Snowdonia.
Yeah.
But this is a totally different take. Mm. Maybe just sort of setting a bit of the background of how you got into all this.
Yeah. Well, what happened was I would call myself primarily a fell runner and a good swimmer. I'm not a triathlete or anything like that. But back in 2019, I had a serious calf injury. So I ruptured my calf and I couldn't run. So I picked up my swimming. You know, you've got to find something to do to kind of keep healthy and mentally well. So I just started swimming more and more. And there's a local outdoor pool that I go to that was raising money for refurbishments. And I thought, what can I do to kind of help? So I came across the Frog Graham, which somebody, having done the Bob Graham before, you kind of hear about these things, don't you? You know, you sort of come into your collective conscious things that you might do in the future. And as I started to rehabilitate my calf injury and my swimming had really improved because I'd been swimming so much, I thought, hang on, this is an opportunity to go and have a crack at the Frog Graham. Okay. So that's kind of where it all started, really. And I was really successful in getting my Frog Graham done back in 2019 in a really good time. And it was a fantastic day out. I loved it. In actual fact, it was, in my mind, the Frog Graham was always the Bob Graham plus swims. So when I actually found out it was quite a lot less mileage and less summits, it was like, oh, okay, that's really achievable. I'm going to go and do it. Yeah.
And how would you best sort of put it into perspective for a lot of the listeners will know kind of what a Bob Graham is.
Yeah.
What's the sort of differences, the main...
Well, the Frog Graham, obviously, you don't swim any lakes in the Bob Graham. You just have to keep going up and down over 42 summits and quite a lot of ascent. But in the Frog Graham, there's 18 summits, so that's quite a bit of a reduction on the 42. Four lakes, so that's Bassamthwaite, Crummock, Buttermere, and Derwentwater.
Okay.
And a considerable less amount of ascent, but still quite a lot, so around about 5,000 metres of ascent, 40 miles approximately. Compared to six, is it about 66, the Bob Graham?
Yeah.
So that's sort of comparing the two. And you've got the open water swims, obviously. So, yeah.
Yeah, which obviously is a huge other element. How does that work in practice? Like, do you have to carry your wetsuit with you or?
Okay, so like anything with ultra running and challenges, you can do these challenges all sorts of different ways. So you can do them fully supported, where people will run with you and meet you at the swims and give you your wetsuits and so on and collect them afterwards. Or you could do a fully unsupported where you have to carry everything yourself. So I did my Frog Graham fully supported. So I had people meet me at the lakes, give me my wetsuit, kayak across whilst I swam. But then as I graduated on and did the other UK swim runs, I sort of moved into more unsupported mixture of supported, unsupported. Okay. Simply because in the lakes I could send a message to all my friends and say, can someone come out and help me on the Frog Graham? Whereas if you're in Wales or Scotland, you don't have that same availability of people.
Yes.
So that's it. You get lots of different ways of doing them.
And again, I don't really have a concept of like how long would one of the swim sections take.
Yeah. Well, for example, on the Frog Graham, Bassamthwaite is the longest swim. And if you're a strong swimmer, that takes around 20 minutes, 25 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. And how far is that?
The Bassamthwaite swim is 900 metres, so just under a kilometre. But it obviously depends on the conditions that you're swimming in. So if you've got a headwind, you've got a little bit of a rip or a wave pushing against you, that all adds to your time and what kind of swimmer you are. Some people do it totally breaststroking it quite slowly, others really, attacking it and doing it proper freestyle. So it does depend.
And presumably on a round like this, you might have to do something in the dark.
Yeah, so exactly. So you, depending on the length of your round, you have to look at doing swims in the dark. So when I did my Frog Graham, I did it in summer, so no problem. All the swims were, I did it in 13 hours, so that's easily done in daylight. But when I did my winter Frog Graham last year, I had to do 2 swims in the dark.
Okay.
Yeah. So that adds a whole different element of complexity, fear.
Terrifying. Yeah.
Terrifying, yeah, absolutely. To get across the lakes in the dark, yeah. And when I did the Ring of Stirling, that was one of my big fears, because my last swim was programmed to be in the dark. And that's a quite a long story, but in the end, because I'd got lost going over Ben Dam, it ended up being twilight by the time I got there, so it wasn't actually dark in the end.
Okay.
But you do get you get skills in swimming in the dark, the more you do. And I was lucky when I did my winter Frog Graham that I had people on the lake supporting me with lights.
Okay.
So I could, and somebody on the opposite shore with a light as well.
I'd imagine it must be really easy to get disorientated swimming in the dark.
Yeah. So you just have to keep sighting. So that's where you put your head under, you swim for so many strokes, and you come up and you look ahead, and you're sighting what you're aiming for, which in the dark would be a light on the opposite shore or a light next to you on a kayak.
Okay.
Yeah.
And yes, because do most people would have a sort of a kayak or some kind of support?
Well, I guess it depends.
It depends what you're doing.
Yeah. So on the Frog Graham, which is the most popular swim run, a lot of people actually fail to complete because they take too long to get round. They hit, say, Derwent Water, their last swim, and they haven't factored in that dark has descended.
Okay.
And they can't get across because they hadn't figured on doing it in the dark.
Okay.
So that's a reason for not completing for some people.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, it's sort of fascinating and terrifying, the thought of swimming something like that in the dark.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've talked, obviously, the Frog Graham, which was the main one I'd heard of. We talked a bit about that. Do you know much about sort of the, like, when that started, like the concept of that and who?
Yeah, so I can't remember the year, but it was conceived by, I think, Tim Mosdell.
Right.
And I forgot the name of the other person. So he lives in Keswick, and they came up with the concept of the Frog Graham. And I think Tim was one of the first people to actually complete it. Tim's a mountaineer runner who lives in Keswick.
Okay.
And it was based on the Bob Graham. You know, it was the idea of doing a swim run that was a similar kind of feel to the Bob Graham, which is why it's called the Frog Graham.
Yeah. And then certainly my sense where I live is that people getting out swimming in the locks and rivers is just absolutely booming. What's the scene like in doing these types of rounds? What are the numbers like? Because obviously this is at the extreme, the expert level of outdoor swimming.
Well, I feel it is definitely a boom, isn't it? There's lots of equipment shops everywhere now where there wasn't before. Everybody seems to have their own float and dry robe. You know, you see people turning up at events in their dry robes and everything. So I think there's definitely a boom to it, and certainly dipping when you get to a certain age, like me. Menopausal 50-year-olds, women are sort of getting into cold water immersion to help with that, with their menopause symptoms. So I think it's definitely a growing sport, but obviously getting more into this real extreme end of it is still quite niche, I would say. Yeah. So I'm also on the Frog Graham committee now, and so I kind of keep an eye on how many people are attempting it each year.
Okay.
And it's still quite low numbers compared to, like, for example, the Bob Graham. Yeah.
So the Bob Graham was 2000 and something, I think, completion, something like that. Which obviously is a big number, and that's been over, a lot longer time. But any rough kind of estimates on people completing a Frog Graham in a year?
Yeah, I thought you might ask me that. I think it's around about 200, but you might need to edit that out. It might be something different, but it's not over 1,000.
Yeah, okay. And so each year, well, I suppose the numbers are probably...
Yeah, so each year it's like around about 30 people attempt, but 15 are successful, something like that. Yeah.
Still quite a lot of people who are going through, you know, a very arduous challenge.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. And then moving sort of to the other rounds, the Puddle Buckley, the Welsh Snowdonia one.
Yeah.
Were you the first female to do that?
Yeah, along with my good friend Claire Regan, and we did it together. So that was conceived by Chris Waters, who also has conceived the Ring of Stirling. And I can't remember how we came across it now, but we did. And he's got a little website about it. And he put the route together and route descriptions and criteria and rules to go and do it. And we found that. And we'd already been out and done things like the Welsh 3000ers before. You know, we'd been out there in the terrain. I've not done a Paddy Buckley, but we've been in Wales quite a lot together. So it really grabbed our interest. And we were really, really lucky to be the first females to get that one done. I think it took us 22 hours and 10 minutes, so longer than a frog. And that's because it is longer, so it's more summits, it's longer miles, and it's much more, I suppose it's a step up from the frog in that it's in wilder terrain, further away from possibilities of support. And so we did it unsupported, but we dumped our wetsuits at various locations so we didn't have to carry everything all the way around.
Okay, yeah.
So we supported ourselves with dumps. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. And it was definitely a step up from a frog, Graham, without a doubt. And our first swim from Lamberis across... forgotten the name of the first swim now. That was in the dark with a light on the other side, you know, to get across that lake.
Is it? Paddan.
Yeah.
Paris, yeah.
Yeah. So okay. that was fantastic. We had like a completely flat mill pond, Lynn Paris, and steam coming off it with the sword. You know, we started at the sword in Lamberis.
All right, okay.
And swam across to a light that we'd actually left on the other side ourselves. And got across that before going up into the mines to start the run. Yeah.
Well, I was going to mention one of the things for me running in North Wales is there's all this different terrain and, you know, from the kind of going up through the old mine quarries to the more rolling hills and then the more kind of rough, techie stuff.
Mm.
But I'm sure, you know, adding in the swim element sort of, there's all the kind of, I guess, mythology and kind of history of Wales. And I wondered, you know, actually being in these some of them quite kind of scary, dark, deep coombs, whether that kind of...
Well, you said...
No, sorry, not coombs, Clynes, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Must add an extra element to it.
It definitely does. I mean, on the Puddle Buckley, we were swimming together. So I think when you're with somebody else, you're not thinking as much about the darkness beneath you.
Yeah.
Because you can see the person on the side of you and you can stop and check in with each other a few times, you know, when you get to the middle, when it's deep and or it's getting colder or more fearsome. But when you swim on your own, like I did on the Ring of Stirling, that definitely you have to overcome your fear if you have that kind of fear of the depths and what's underneath you. Yeah.
Was that, how much of a factor for you was that? Was that an issue or are you quite good with that side of it?
Generally, I'm good, but I would describe the Ring of Stirling round as 24 hours of overcoming one fear after another.
Okay, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But then I am not your strongest swimmer. Like, there are some really awesome outdoor swimmers in the triathlete world and, you know, channel swimmers and everything. I wouldn't put myself in that category. So part of the fear was, because I was on my own on the Ring of Stirling in Scotland, was you know, that fear of what happens if in the middle of this lake I get cramp or I can't move or I can't get to the other side for whatever reason and there's nobody around to rescue you or get you out. So that was the kind, it was partly irrational because I am a good enough swimmer. I think a stronger swimmer would have just been head down and on with it, but I certainly had to overcome fear to get across some of the swims on the Ring of Stirling because it was so remote. Yeah.
Yeah, and it sounds, you know, yeah, very much in the same way that going out solo, you're going out on your own in the hills, mm-hmm, you know, it's, there's a self-sufficiency thing here. You've got to be prepared to look after yourself and,
yeah,
and deal with, you know, there's a number of things that could happen, isn't there? The weather could change.
Yeah.
The wind could change, the light could change.
Exactly. Yeah.
Your how you feel physically could change, i.e. yeah, it could get really tough.
Yeah.
And I'm sure, yeah, that's the same with, mm, you know, these solo swims or, you know, remote places on your, yeah, own. You kind of need to know your...
Yeah, exactly. You need to know your limits. When I did the winter frog, Graham, of course, the lakes were really cold. So we're talking about 1, 2, 3 degrees, which is easily cramp-inducing, and you shut down really, really quickly. And so I took absolutely no chances. I was double neoprened from head to foot, okay. You know, which will slow your swim down. But I was really confident then of getting in the water and just going for it and attacking it, knowing I could get across. And on the first swim across Bassenthwaite in the frog, I knew that was the clutch of it, the crunch, like if I could get across that first lake in those temperatures, I knew I could do the whole round. Yeah, and I did. And I got out the other end and I actually was not cold. I had goose fat on my hands, I had double layer neoprene, and my friend Claire, who was supporting me, stripping off my wetsuit and helping me, she was freezing, standing, okay, and I was like really warm and hot, so I was hotter than she was, even though it was winter. So, you know, it's just like preparing and being aware of what could happen, thinking about how you're going to handle it and overcome some of those kind of obstacles, if you like. Sorry, I'm jumping around from all the different rounds, but it's bringing back different memories.
That's, yeah. Yeah, that's the way we roll on this, yeah, on this podcast. and it's all, yeah, I guess that gives the picture of it's all... it's a continuing development experience, isn't it?
Yeah.
And things,
yeah,
that you've learnt maybe in the winter frog, Graham, were,
yeah,
then useful,
yeah,
later on.
Yeah, absolutely. But I've made mistakes as well. And I've also found that you do have to go with the flow. You can't put one, what worked for one will work for another. You have to adapt. And that's what I really love about swim runs, more than just like a straight run, is just the logistics and thinking it through and thinking how you're going to tackle that swim and get from there to here and get your kit down. I mean, I suppose it's a bit like ski mountaineering. It's a whole different ball game and a whole different set of equipment, and you've got to, and I love that. I love the planning of it. Yeah.
Yeah, there's sort of this extra, yeah.
Yeah.
Extra layer. Yeah, there's a bit more going on, isn't
Absolutely.
There?
Absolutely.
You've got to factor that in too.
Yeah, yeah.
What, and just on that note, when you said about the Puddle Buckley and you said you had the kit drops,
yeah,
was that, had you pre-dropped some stuff,
yeah,
like different wetsuits in different places?
Yeah, that's
so,
right.
Yeah, so then you could leave stuff at road crossings.
So we begged and borrowed wetsuits from everybody.
Okay.
And so we had 4 swims, so we had 4 different wetsuits
All
each.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
And we hid them and dumped them before,
oh, okay,
each of the late swims.
Yeah, yeah.
And then hid them on the other side when we got out, so that when we were running, we didn't actually have to carry,
yes,
a heavy wetsuit.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the next day after we'd finished, we went back and retrieved our dumps.
Okay, yeah. Which, because a wetsuit that you've swam in must be... Mm. Pretty heavy when it's on your back.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I think you're adding an extra 2 kilos because it's got water in it,
yeah,
as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's not, well, definitely a kilo. I've never actually weighed a wet wetsuit, so I don't know, but yeah.
And again, this is a pretty, probably a stupid question because I don't know much about triathlon either, but they sort of wear, obviously that's a shorter, much more sort of intense, but they kind of leave the same kit on sometimes, and they run in their wetsuit.
They will run, bike and swim in a tri-suit, which is a very thin layer of neoprene, which they can run and swim in and bike in, is my understanding. And so I do know that some people have done the Frog Graham in a tri-suit, for example, and done very fast time. But if you were planning to do it in a tri-suit and some of these others, I think you would get really cold. I think you would need to have more layers on. So, because when my first attempt at the Ring of Stirling failed because I got hypothermic Vic Erica.
Yeah, okay.
In really cold weather with a biting wind, which perhaps I was stupid to set out in, but I swam it and successfully swam along it. But when I got out the other end, the wind chill was so severe that I couldn't stop shivering for 20 minutes. And I had compromised and taken too thin a layer of neoprene, trying to reduce the weight that I was carrying. So I had neoprene shorts and just a thin neoprene top, hat and gloves, but they were not thick enough, too light, and I had to abort after that swim.
Okay.
Yeah.
And this is the beautiful, like, amazing Loch and Corrie Vicarica of the triple buttresses, so the climbers, on Benet, so the climbers will be thinking about triple buttresses. I've walked past that loch in quite a few times, but sadly I've never swum in it. Maybe you need to do a dunk in it.
Yeah, you should. It's brilliant. And when I'm talking about the depths beneath you, when I actually did my successful Ring of Stirling, I swam across it in the opposite direction with the sun out, and it was much nicer, but it's got a shelf along the edge, which is sandstone, and so the turquoise is, the water is turquoise along that bit. And then the middle is very, very dark because it drops into a coombe underneath, and an old Lancaster bomber has crashed into the top of that corrie. And so as I was swimming along, I had to really blank out any images of a Lancaster bomber in the bottom of the depths, or even worse, because your mind goes ballistic, doesn't it? Skeletons sitting in the in the plane as I was swimming. So I had to stay over the shelf so that I didn't face the deep coombe, because the deep coombe felt very imposing as I did that swim when I did it the second time.
I might be mixing stories a bit, but that crash, it's a real... It's really tragic because it, well, all crashes are, but particularly this one, that I think it was low cloud, and and they, when you see the highest bit of wreckage on up towards the summit of that part of Benet, like they very almost kind of cleared it, but obviously not quite. And then there's wreckage in one of the gullies. It's called Fuselage Gully, and there's a propeller actually you can climb it in, like as a winter climb, and you.
And there's a wheel low down by the start of the corrie as well,
And I believe this accident might have been one of the starting of sort of organised mountain rescue. I'm probably mixing the story slightly, but there was a lot of, I think it was in, actually, I may well be botching the story, but I think it was, there was a lot of like walking in. I think my grandfather was possibly involved to the corrie to try and recover
people. Some people,
And it was the start of kind of organised mountain rescue in Scotland, or more organised. I should have checked my facts for that.
Yeah, it's an interesting story. I definitely had to get all thoughts of skeletons out of my head as I was swimming.
It's a somber, somber thing, seeing that wheel and wreckage, and I think we've moved on to the Ring of Stirling now, haven't we? So maybe just let's maybe set out a bit about the history of that and how you sort of came to hear about it.
So again, you don't really know how these things come to your attention, but once you've done the English swim run round and you've done the Welsh one, you start, putting out your feelers for what's available in Scotland. And this came to me, the Ring of Stirling, via a friend, Paul Wilson, who shared it with me. And the same person, Chris Waters, who conceived the Puddle Buckley, conceived the Ring of Stirling. And it's got a confusing title because you might think it is in Stirling in Scotland, but actually it's named after Chris Waters' good friend, Chris Stirling,
okay.
who was a really successful athlete, triathlete, who sadly died. I think he took his own life, actually.
Okay.
And he was a good friend of Chris's, and they always did lots of fun adventures starting in Shaldeg in Torridon.
Okay.
So Chris conceived the round specifically with his friend in mind, in his honour, if you like,
yes.
To start and finish at Shaldeg in Torridon.
Okay.
So that's the background. I don't know Chris. I've got to know him a little bit by email because of the Puddle Buckley and the Ring of Stirling. But I thought that was a really lovely conception to name it after one of your friends that you lost in such tragic circumstances. Yeah. So that's how I came across it. And then COVID hit. So I came across it before COVID. And so I kind of had to put it on a back burner.
Okay.
But then Martin Price, who is the secretary of the Frog Graham Committee, poked me last year and said, you know, I was thinking you'd be in a really good position to be the first person to do all three UK swim runs because you've done the Puddle, you've done the Frog, you've done a Winter Frog now, how about the Ring of Stirling? And I said, yes, you know, I've been thinking about that. And that was what really clinched it and what it became, you know, my target for this year. So I did it in May this year.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it's, we've obviously sort of talked around some of it, but what's the sort of overview of, I think it's about, is it about 55 kilometres?
Yeah, 55
miles.
Yeah.
Yeah, in total.
Five and a half metres of ascent. And it's five swims, which is more than any, more than the other UK swim runs. And really importantly, one of the swims is a tidal sea swim.
Yeah, okay.
Which added a huge, not an obstacle, but a huge challenge to it compared to the others.
Because all the other rounds and swims we've been talking about thus far don't have that.
No, they don't have any sea swims in them.
Yeah.
So this is the first one that has a sea swim, but not just a sea swim. It's a tidal swim across a narrows that can, if it was caught in a tidal rip, create, and you know, narrows create their own rips could be potentially quite dangerous. So in Chris's instructions and write-up, which are very detailed and available on his little website, he gives very strict instructions about that first swim.
Okay.
So he's really particular that you have to do it at slack tide, and that you must not do it in any windy conditions because it would, you know, you might not come back, basically. Yeah.
I'll find the links to. I've had a look at Chris's website, so I'll put those links on the episode info.
Yeah.
It must be incredible that swim. It's up Loch Torridon, the narrows there.
So when I arrived, I've set a week aside, a week of holiday to go up to Torridon, and I was really lucky to have two friends who were Munroing and Corbetting up in the area, who have a camper van. And they agreed to support me. When I arrived at the first weekend with another friend, Angela, who was going to run with me, but she wasn't going to swim.
Okay.
There was a really strong wind. Like the minute you arrived at Torridon, the campsite, and looked down, you could see the white horses on the loch and on Loch Torridon, and my heart sank because I knew, because it was lovely. It was blue skies, dry, it wasn't going to rain, you know.
Okay.
It was May, so a good time of year to go, no midges. I thought, oh my God, I'm not going to get across that narrows, you know, because I just had his words in my head, do not go in a wind.
Okay.
And when I came round to have a look at it, it was definitely a no-goer. It was like, no, even at slack tide, there was no way I was doing it. But I'm so determined and I'm really tenacious that I was like, right, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go in the opposite direction.
Okay.
Which he doesn't recommend, by the way. I'm going to go in the opposite direction. And when I get to here, I'm just going to wait. I don't care how long it takes. I'm just going to wait for the next slack tide, you know, because I'm not worried about the time. But that's when I came a cropper at Cori Vic Erica. Because by the time I got there, having done Leofec and, you know, Ben Dam and already one swim, it was getting dark, the wind chill was up, I hadn't taken enough layers of neoprene, and I had to abort after that swim because I was just so cold and on the verge of hypothermia. So that was my first attempt, that first weekend. So I went home thinking, well, you know, come back another time.
And you'd gone a long way at this point, hadn't you?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
The way Chris sets it out is a clockwise round, isn't it? Starting from Scheldig.
Yeah.
Swimming Loch Torridon, and then loosely you're doing...
Ben Allagan.
Yeah.
Tom Na Gruach and Skegmore. Yeah, and then down over your first swim and up Bousbien. Bousbien, yeah. and then down to Loch Na Oldich.
I actually had a look at this and was like, oh, I've got no idea how to pronounce this one. Bousbien is an absolutely beautiful peak. Mm. And does it mean Wizard's Peak?
Yeah, possibly something like that. Yeah.
And then you swim the loch between that and the next Corbett.
Yeah. Benanoin, is it? Yeah. And then you come across Flowerdale. Across the remote Flowerdale and up to Cori Vic Erica and Rudstack Moor Benai.
Yeah.
And then you drop down the scree run over Leofec, two summits on there, and then down to Torridon campsite, and then you have to run along the road and up Ben Dam, off Ben Dam and across Loch Dam, and then back into Scheldig. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, so when you tried it this first attempt, which was what time of year was that?
Middle of May.
Okay.
Yeah.
That was just this May.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was you obviously tried to go the opposite way, the anti-clockwise. Yeah. So you'd gone.
I'd done three summits only, Ben Dam, the two on Leofec. Oh, and Ben I. Yeah. So I'd done four summits and two swims, but I had to abort. Yeah. But I learned so much doing that, and more than anything, actually, it made me more determined to come back and do it, and felt like it was achievable. Whereas before, you kind of had this, feeling of, is it too much? The terrain, the mountains are huge, the ascents and descents are vertical, aren't they, and the swims were in the middle of nowhere. But after I'd done that, I thought, actually, I can do it. If I can get across that sea lock and that tidal swim, I think it is in my grasp. So that was the crunch.
That was the key.
Yeah, that was the key.
And how did you feel having that as the first swim, if you're doing this normal kind of clockwise? Way, how helpful or how is that?
Yeah, well, I think it is the only way to do it, to have it as your first swim now that I've done it both ways. So what happened was I went home after having an unsuccessful attempt and still had a week off work. And there was another weekend, of course, at the end of that week. And I just happened to check the weather, which was all about the wind speed, actually, because that's a really important point when you're swim running. It's more about the wind speed than it is anything else, because you want the lakes to be calm. And I thought, oh my goodness, actually the next weekend is now looking really good. The weather's still dry. So in a really crazy turnaround, I repacked and went back to Torridon like in the same week, because my friends were also still there in the area. And contacted them, look, I'm coming back. I know you think I'm mad, but please can you support me again? And they dropped everything and they said yes.
Okay.
And I went back, and the really sort of fortuitous thing was that my friends had booked into Scheldig campsite and met the owner, Rory McLennan, who's a really lovely guy. And when I arrived, they were they'd made friends with him, and I was telling him how I was worried about the sea swim, and he also remembered Chris Waters,
okay,
who'd been and done it and conceived it, and he said, look, I'll come across the sea swim with you on a kayak.
Okay.
And I thought, oh my God, that's what I need, you know, I think that's what I need to start, the confidence.
Okay, yeah.
And bless him, he came out at 6 a.m. Kayaked around the point from Shieldegg, met me here, and we got there. It wasn't perfect. It wasn't like a turquoise flat,
okay,
you know, swim by any means. It was quite wavy, but just having him there meant that I was had the confidence to get in and get across, and I did it. And the minute I got out the other end, I knew I could get this, you know, I could finish the round.
Okay.
Just had to keep going then.
Yeah.
Well, that was the first fear, getting across that, because I said it was 24 hours of fear.
Yes.
Yeah.
And this is sort of, you've ran maybe like a kilometre to get
yeah,
there or
not
something.
Very far.
So it's really
yeah,
kind of
yeah,
straight into it.
Yeah, straight into it, yeah.
And then, going on, I suppose, from there, how did the day pan out?
Well, the minute I got onto land after that sea swim, I was so ecstatic to have done it that the thought of going up Ben Allegan and Tom na Gruaig, which is really, really steep from that direction, no pathless steep as well.
Yes.
I was like, well, I don't care because I'm not going to drown anymore. So I don't care if something's a little bit steep, you know. So I really just bashed it off. And by the time I got to the top of here, the most gorgeous day was unfolding. And you could see, you know, up to Anchilac. You could see as far as Skye, Gairloch in the distance.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just awesome. And then I sort of came down off Skerg Moor and across this sort of back of Ben Allegan, no man's land, down to my next sea lock. When I arrived, it was completely flat and beautiful.
Wow.
And I, whilst I was sort of worried about it, being on my own in the middle of nowhere, actually that one was idyllic, an idyllic swim, yeah.
And this is, Loch Avilek at the kind of south.
Yeah.
Of Bowsvin. And I think when you said no man's land, that's the other thing that strikes me is similar to when I was speaking to Robin Downey about his Martin Moran round this Torridon as well a few episodes back. The routes you go between the summits or between the lochans, it makes you take a quite unusual way that you wouldn't if you were, say, just going to do the Munros on Leitak Ridge or something like that.
Yeah.
Like you end up, like north of Ben Allegan and I love that aspect of these types of challenges because you're exploring something that very few people would
absolutely and would. You find yourself picking up little deer tracks because that's all there is and thinking, you know, I'm here with the in the wild just following where the animals go, which is really nice feel to it.
And you were on your own on this one.
Yeah.
Was that for the rest of the time or?
Yeah, so for this, for the first section, for the next two swims, I was on my own and I was carrying my wetsuit gear as well. So this time I had not compromised. So I carried heavier gear because I wanted to have full long wetsuit, arms and legs, plus an under wetsuit, the hood, the gloves, the booties, plus all the food that you need as well. So I think my kit was probably 4.5 to 5 kilos, a bit like an OM sort of weight, but no tent, obviously. So it was wetsuit instead of your tent.
What sort of thickness of wetsuit do you have when you've got, I suppose, all the layers on?
Yeah. So my under wetsuit, my thermal was 2 millimeters, and then I had a 3 millimeter on top of that, so 5.
Okay.
Yeah. And I had undershorts as well as long. Because I'd failed that first time due to cold, I didn't want to compromise, so I did take the two.
Yeah.
So I essentially had two wetsuits in my bag.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then, like you said, your food and all your running stuff as well.
Yeah. But that swim went really well, and wasn't feeling any fear there. That was quite good. And this Bosbien, can't pronounce it very well, seemed to come and go, and it was really beautiful. You know, the views up there. And I was, like you say, sort of finding your way off a route that is less taken as well is really interesting, because you're having to navigate. And I loved that aspect of it, just out on your own, navigating your way down to where Chris had stipulated the next swim point was. Yeah.
And I've got a question about that later on, actually. But so then you're on to swim number three.
Yeah.
And it must take a bit of time, effort, energy getting changed, you know, getting to the lock side, obviously. And, getting ready. How long do you think that takes?
So to get your two layers of wetsuit on, you've probably got 15 minutes, I would say, by the side of the lake getting changed. And one of the factors is you've got to practice it at home, because you don't want to be out in the middle of nowhere not able to get your zip up at the back, which can be really hard in some really tight wetsuits. So I actually took a really old wetsuit that was quite much easier to pull the zip up. So rather than a really brand new one that was really tight on me, because I just knew I couldn't be in the middle of nowhere and not be able to get that final. Because you can see some people really, you know, struggling and taking a really long time to get that zip up, because there's no one to do it for you.
No.
And the trick is you take, I took a tiny little bottle of watered down hair conditioner and you spray it, you squeeze it on your body, and it makes your wetsuit slightly slippy and it makes the zip come up easier.
All right.
Yeah. Okay. But I wasn't particularly worried about time. Because apart from the fact I'd hoped to get it done in under 24 hours, I didn't in the end, and that's the story evolves as to why that didn't happen. But I wasn't like, you know, on and off like a full transition that you do in triathlon. I was taking my time and making sure everything was packed, because you've then got to get all your stuff into your swim bag that you tow behind you.
Yeah.
So that's the other thing you've got to practice before you go. You've got to make sure everything you're carrying, your shoes, your running gear, will all go into your tow bag, because you can't leave it on the side. Yeah.
Yeah. And that must be quite an aspect as well, getting everything to fit in and making sure it floats and whatnot.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you have any sort of rituals, like, or anything that you do before you set off then, at that point, once you've packed everything away or just get going?
I spit into my goggles so they don't steam up. And I have a gel before a swim. I'm actually not really a gel girl, but I did take them because they were light and good and energy. And that's my ritual, I suppose.
And then getting out the other side, you have to reverse that process again.
So this swim is my big regret of the round. So Chris had said in his notes that if it was really windy and choppy, because it's again in the middle of nowhere, you can actually stay to the shore and cross at the narrows here. So I got to about here and the wind really picked up, and I couldn't overcome my fear of going into the middle on my own. So I reversed my direction, changed my direction, and came all the way down here to this narrow area and swam across there. But I ended up being in the water for about 40 minutes, which I think was probably longer than if I'd just gone straight across. And I was really cold by the time I got out the other end side. It was quite cold. I knew as I was coming across here that I had to get out soon, or else I was going to start shutting down. So your hands, you can get like a claw cramp in your fingers and in your toes, which means you can't kick and pull. And it was starting to happen in my hands, so I knew I had to get out quick. And then, of course, if you get out the other side and you can't use your hands, you're then getting colder because you can't strip off. So one of the techniques is to actually start moving in your wetsuit and not strip off straight away, which is what I did. I just yanked the toe flow and over my shoulder and started climbing until I felt hot and warm, and then I got changed.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, because it is, it's a serious situation, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm just imagining that. It's just, yeah. You on your own there and kind of in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I feel regretful because I feel I chickened out. So I emailed Chris Watters afterwards and said, you know, why don't you make it the smaller swim? Because why set it at such a big swim? Because this is the biggest swim of the round and it's in the middle of nowhere. And he replied and said, well, if I'd made it a small swim, it would have felt more like a run swim rather than a swim run.
Okay.
And I thought, oh, God, yeah, he's right, isn't he? Yeah, I kind of wish I'd not chickened out, but just around about here, it just felt a long way still, and I thought I'd better play it safe and come down the edge.
Okay. But yeah, still.
But, yeah, and he said that was allowable in strong wind. And by the time I got to here, so this first swim was really idyllic, but by the time I'd gone over here and come down here, there was a strong wind ripping right down this lochan.
Okay.
Which felt quite, you know, scary to be there and start swimming across on your own. I think a really competent triathlete wouldn't have thought any second about it. They would have just got in, but, you know, I am who I am. And
it's a real a bit like some of the mountaineering, running kind of link up things I've done with the skis and things like. There's a skill mix there.
Yeah.
You can't just be a strong swimmer. You need to be, you know, self-sufficient in the mountains and, at the side of a random
you have to be in
Scotland.
Aware of your limits. You know, you have to also navigate, sometimes in the water as well.
Yeah.
You have to be aware of, like, those little tricks of running in your wetsuit to warm up. Yeah, it is it's a multi-skill sport, which is really great. Yeah.
So after you'd warmed up then, so after this is the third swim complete.
Yeah. Then you come down off Ben An Oin into Flowerdale, which in really bad weather, apparently some of this can be uncrossable because it gets really flooded with all these little tiny lochans.
Yeah, we're looking at the map and there's just all these lochans and tortuous rivers and streams.
Yeah.
It looks like it'd be really rough to run across this stuff.
Yeah, I know. And in actual fact, it was much more runnable than I thought it was going to be. And it was dry and there was no issues with getting across anything. So I was really lucky and I just set a bearing. But by the time you kind of get to about here, you can actually see the waterfall area coming off Corrie-Vickerica. And so you had something really clear to aim for.
Okay.
Yeah. And then that was where I was also meeting my friends, Harry and Karen Gill, who would come up from the road up the main tourist path into the Corrie. And were meeting me there to give me some supplies and, just see how I was by that stage.
Yeah.
So I wasn't complete. So this was the end of me being on my own, and this is where I met friends again. So after I swam Corrie-Vickerica, they took my wetsuit off me. So I had this brilliant run up Rudstack Moor without the weight of my wetsuit.
Nice,
oh, God, it was fantastic. And I really remembered this really well because, of course, I'd done this in reverse only the weekend before. And the weekend before, I'd come up this awful scree run, which I have to recommend to nobody to go up that scree run ever, ever in your life because it was terrible. But then I came down it and it was over and done with. You know, it's a proper scree run. Really, really running it out by the time I got down to here.
Yeah, this is like the climber's sort of shortcut scree run down off the south side of Ben A.
Yeah. So my friends Harry and Karen, who now had the weight of my wetsuit, wanted to meet me again here. So they had to really get a sprint on because this was actually very fast for me to get down. Yeah.
And how did the swim of Lochan, Corrie-Vickerica, how did that go compared to just the week before when you'd, when you'd got frozen and had to
totally abort? Different. It was still really cold. I won't pretend it wasn't. I think it was probably around about 8 degrees. It was cold, high luck. It's still early May. But because the sun was out and you were on that lime shelf on the edge, avoiding the deep abyss with the Lancaster bomber in it, it actually was beautiful and went really quickly. It was quite cold when I got out, but it was nice because I had the support of my friends there who were, you know, really looking after me really well and had soup and all sorts of things to warm me up, yeah.
And you've written on your map there, is that 575 meters? So that's the length of that swim.
So, yeah, I swam actually down this edge because it was in the sun and in the opposite on the east side. Well, when I went the opposite way, I swam down the west side in the dark and the wind, and that was when I was hypothermic.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So very, very different experience this the second time.
Mm.
And then you were picking up your wetsuit again.
Well, no.
No.
In actual fact, not because... So I just ate some more food here and went over Liafek in the most gorgeous sunset. I was so lucky. And this flower dale was all under a blanket of mist. So it's like it was closing down. It's like saying, you've done that bit now. You can't.
Wow.
And the sun was above the mist. And when I came down off Liafek into Torridon, my friends were able to meet me again, you see.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Yeah, because it's just on the road.
Was Liafek, was that, because it's a really, you know, sort of rough, techie ridge, was that an issue at all, or were you quite at home on that type of terrain?
Well, I do feel at home on that terrain. It's very vertical, isn't it? And in places, if you have a fear of heights, it's quite, what do you call it, vertiginous, whatever. But I'm fine with it. I think if I, the previous weekend, I'd come down this route and down into...
right off the east end of
And had I not done that the weekend, I might have been quite worried about how this was going to go and unfold, because this is not a usual route up. But in actual fact, because I'd been down it only the weekend before, I felt really confident, and it gave way nicely. It kind of goes into a grade 2 scramble at the top and onto that first summit, and then you're on the ridge nicely, really, as long as you stick on the ridge in good visibility. It went really well. Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you were crossing Glentoridan, going south of the road.
Yeah. And I stopped at the campsite for in my friend's camper van for a meal, like a hot meal. Changed my clothing into like night, because it's now night coming.
Okay.
Getting ready for a night ascent of Ben Dam. And of course, I've got the mist come in as well. So I maybe spent 30 minutes there just changing my shoes, getting making sure they were going to meet me at Ben Dam, because you can get to Ben Dam quite quickly from the road after Loch Dam, sorry. They're going to meet me at Loch Dam, my final swim, in the morning, which is going to be in the dark. Okay.
Okay.
So they were going to meet me there. After I've gone over Ben Dam with a fresh wetsuit, my thickest wetsuit with a thermal layer, because it was the dark swim. So I set off from Torridon campsite. All I could think about was that dark swim. Like, I just, oh God, you know, come on, just keep putting one foot in front of the other, get over the mountain first, and then think about the swim. Don't try and one step at a time. But I was fearful of the dark swim. But then the weather, the mist, as soon as I was going up Ben Dam, the mist came in, and I had to navigate, and I'd made a crucial error, and I hadn't swapped my maps at my stop, so I didn't have the map. All for right, Ben Dam. Okay. And I'm a really good navigator and orienteer, so I can really navigate, but without a map.
Yeah.
So all I had was a phone with, what do you call it on it? OS Maps.
All right, okay.
On my phone. And I've never, ever navigated using OS maps on a phone. And in the mist on the top of Ben Dam, I got really confused, disorientated. I was going around in circles, backwards and forwards.
Ben Dam is a pretty complicated mountain. It's
really
beautiful,
complicated.
Steep-sided, but quite a kind of long, flat top.
And you can't,
it?
You know, if you're in the dark and the mist, the path becomes, well, just stony ground, doesn't it? You know, there's no clear path to sort of get to. My pace slowed to like 1 mile per hour. I was literally going five steps forward and then realizing I was going the wrong direction, going back the other way. Oh God, it was a bit of an epic and quite frightening. And eventually though, I did reach the summit plateau, thank God. But as I was coming off the summit plateau, the twilight is coming. So okay. I'm like, oh my God, that's taken me so long. I don't have to do a dark swim anymore. Oh, so. Yeah. So by the time I got down to my last swim at lockdown, it was light. You know, okay. It was really early morning.
And how did that affect you sort of mentally? Because I can imagine you must have been incredibly frustrated without your map. And
oh God. Well, I was in text contact with my friend Karen. At one stage she said, are you safe?
Yeah.
And I kind of thought in my heart of hearts, it's a bit 50-50 this. Okay. But if I put no, she'll call the mountain rescue and this will all be over. So I replied and said yes. But I think it was a thin line between it could have gone really badly because I was starting to get cold. Okay. I was definitely going around in circles. And I was panicking as well.
Okay.
Yeah. So it was affecting me. The answer to your question is, quite a lot.
A dark place.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then when the twilight started coming, when you got to the summit, and how did that change things?
Good. So suddenly that whole, I hadn't actually thought about the swim when I got lost because I was just in that moment, that fear of trying to navigate. But then that sort of sheer relief of knowing that the last swim was going to be in the daylight was a really nice feeling. But I still had to get off Ben Dam. Yeah. And it's really complex descent.
Did you think you were going to have to call it? You were going to have to give up at some point in the night there?
Yeah, that went through my head. Yeah. That went through my head. But again, that tenacious side of me. So I kept saying things like, don't muck it up now. You know, and as you're coming down off Ben Dam, it's like a really horrible boulder field and every boulder you stand on wobbles. And I kept having to say to myself, don't, just be careful, take your time, don't do an ankle now, don't fall. It's going to be a disaster. I did wonder about whether I could just get into a shelter on the top and just wait for the light to come. But I just kept going and it worked out. But it was a thin line, actually.
And you're coming off, I think, were you coming off west off Ben Dam, kind of?
Yeah, sort of south, if you like.
Okay.
Yeah, dropping into, it's off the map, but dropping down south, down to the lock dam.
Which won't, there'll be no paths in there at all.
No.
It'll be a very kind of infrequented area.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was horrible.
Okay.
Really horrible. And then you're into like tussocky, grass and bracken and loose boulders, and took a long time to get down.
Okay.
So my friends were waiting at the lock, and one friend was on one side of the lock and he had to sleep on the beach in his clothes because I was like 2 hours behind schedule and he hadn't taken a tent. And my other friend was on the other side walking up and down, sort of trying to see if she could see my torch coming down.
Okay.
Worrying about me, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good to have them involved.
Yeah. I think I did actually have a little tear when I met Karen at the bottom, when I got off onto the track by the lock. Tears of relief. But also, I felt so bad because I kept them waiting and I knew they would have been worrying. And yeah.
And then that swim, it sounds like you're saying that. The trepidation of the night swim had gone. And
but what had happened is, with twilight brings its own little weather system, so the wind was really ferocious and it was like a beach, a small beach with waves coming at it. And it was really, really, really choppy. And I remember turning to my friend and saying, do you think it's safe to go across this, you know, in this chop? And she said, well, you know, if we were here kind of for other reasons, we probably wouldn't be swimming today, but I don't think you've got any choice. So she said, just get in, start. So I did, and it was all right. I got through it, but it was very choppy, but it was all right. It was fine, yeah.
And you had your friends on the shore, but again, yeah, it was just you in the
Yeah, she said to me, look, on the other side, Harry, he's got a fire and it'll be nice and warm. And I thought she meant like a metaphorical fire, you know, you'll be nice and warm. But actually, when I got there, there was a fire. And he'd made this little seat and he sat me down next to this campfire and I got changed. And oh my God, the sheer relief of getting across that swim, knowing all I had to do was get back to Shieldegg, was enormous. Yeah. I remember putting my hands in the air going, oh yes, I've done it.
And but you still had Ben Shieldegg,
yes,
right left, which yeah, was the thing I wanted to ask you earlier, because mm-hmm, that's like a fortress. It's steep on all sides.
Yeah, and also it's the worst terrain of it all, really. And I'd learned this when I went the opposite direction. Yeah. The heather that you go through absolutely trashes your shins. So I knew I had to have gaiters, orienteering gaiters on for this section, okay, which I did when I went now from this, so that, because I literally was bleeding the first time I did it, all down my shins, completely torn. Right, I still okay, got permanent scars really? From that first descent of Ben right, Shieldegg. And so Harry decided to come with me over that, so I was with somebody on that bit, so it didn't, you know, it came and went, and my body was starting to tell me I'd had enough, because I don't normally get sick on long runs, but I actually had a little retch going over there, just, I think, the sheer effort of the whole, like, the fear and keeping going yeah, and the exhaustion, yeah.
Was this your longest adventure?
The longest ever adventure was the Frog Man, which will confuse okay, your listeners. That is something that myself and Claire Regan conceived, which is all the summits of the Bob Graham plus four swims
okay,
in a single continuous round, and that was 39 hours.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So this wasn't quite the longest, but...
So you'd already done that?
I'd already done that, yes, yeah, a year before, 2 years okay, before, yeah.
So you're no stranger to
a long
time on your feet, but yeah, still, yeah, you'd been out a long time.
Yeah, I'd been out a long time, so it was 26 and a half hours by the time I got back to Ben Shieldegg, and I'd hoped it had been under 24, which I think okay, is definitely achievable if you don't get lost on Ben Dam. Yeah.
But, which way did you come down from Ben Shieldegg? Because that is really steep yeah, down to Shieldegg, isn't it?
It is, yeah. So I came down, when you come off the summit, you veer slightly south, down a gully, and then you sort of head more west, coming around the front of it, underneath the rock ridge.
Okay.
Yeah. So we went a way that was recommended by Rory McLennan, but actually the way that Chris recommends going down is slightly different. I didn't go the way that Chris said, I went the way okay, that Rory said. And it was all right, yeah, but you do have to know it, because there's some steep cliffs that drop off, because like you say, yeah, it's like a fortress,
yeah,
and you've got to go either around them to the south first, or yeah, cut down a steep gully off to the north and then come back round.
And come back.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what was where was your start finish point in Shieldegg? What?
So it's at the War Memorial.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, just on the little yeah, hill above the campsite.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you're meant to sit there and reflect on the fact that while this was hard, it was probably a lot harder for the men in the trenches from Applecross who fought in the war. So you sit there and contemplate that, really, compared to them. You've not really done anything. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good touch to it, yeah. And what did it feel like finishing after this, 26 hours?
Great. I was really proud of myself. I wanted to be the first female to get that round done. And after Martin Price said, I think you'd be in a good position to be the first person to do all three UK ones, I felt really proud, to have done it. And also more proud to have got through what turned into a little bit of an epic at the end as well.
I think, are you the second person to complete the Ring of Sterling as well?
So Chris says that he did it, but then changed it, so he hasn't put himself on the completers list, but I think he should be. I think he's just a very modest person. So I would say it's Chris and myself are the only people who've done it. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And are you aware of anyone else who's sort of interested or?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So there's a few people locally in the Lakes who were really keen. And Martin Price was telling me there's a few people interested in doing it as well, who sort of done the Frog Graham and want to move on to something else. Yeah.
Okay. And I suppose you could answer this either individually or just for swim runs in general. Mm. Like, where do you see things going next?
Well, individually for me, just making up my own little adventures and keeping my swim running going. You can do little runs and small swims, in the lakes. It'd be really nice if there was an Irish one, if someone came up with a concept for an Irish one, I'd probably go and do that. And where do I see it going? Well, it'd be really nice if the Ring of Sterling did get more people doing it. I think that there'll be some really fast contenders who do it really quickly. There's quite a few people now done the Puddle Buckley. So I'm sure the interest is there, because the same people who've done the Frog and then the Puddle Buckley will, I'm sure, turn their sights to the Ring of Sterling as their next challenge. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure it's got that draw, the same as the big rounds, the big running rounds do. It's that draw and wanting to explore different places and have that sort of intense experience over this long challenge.
Yeah. I don't think they'll ever gain the popularity that, your ultra challenges like the Frog Graham, Tranters and so on have. But that's okay, isn't it? Each to their own. Yeah.
It's, you need that skill mix, don't you? I'm looking at the maps here and it looks incredible, but for me to try something like this, I'd need to do an awful lot of swimming. Mm. I can swim, but I haven't really done much other than sort of dunking.
Yeah.
Some cold water dunking I've really enjoyed. But
Well, you do. You need your skill mix. And I couldn't go out and do a ski adventure because I don't ski. So it's what you do, isn't it? It's what each person has a skill in to combine it with. Yeah.
When you were saying about practicing your transitions in skiing, where you call it transitions from going uphill with your skins on your skis to downhill, and you were saying about practicing getting your kit on and off in the living room or whatever. So skiing racers practice their kit on and their skis, and they practice whipping their skins off because the technique of doing that really quickly.
Yeah.
Similar. Well, thanks very much, Natalie. It's been really fun to just kind of get into the nitty gritty of what it takes, what it means, and go through the maps, and particularly that the Ring of Steel, which sounds like it was an incredible adventure.
Yeah, it was, absolutely. Thank you very much for giving me the time to talk about it. I've enjoyed it.
Pleasure.
Yeah.
Thanks. That's the end of episode 30. It's been great fun. Hope everyone's enjoyed it, and hopefully get back with another episode not too long, not as long a wait for the next one this time, hopefully. Thanks. Bye.